You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
Everybody, today is Sunday, June 10th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 72 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with Marie Terry of EvilSpaceCat.com.
Hi.
Alex Heberlink of AlexsGuide.net.
In before Catcopter.
And Eric Kimball of BladeBunny.com.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And I'm Jason Strasberg, your host for today. We're going to start up with our top stories coming up, and we'll go to you, Eric.
Our top story for this week is the death of Ray Bradbury. Ray Bradbury, the world-famous science fiction author, died at 91 after a lengthy illness. Bradbury was famous for writing collections of stories such as The Martian Chronicles, Fahrenheit 451, and The Illustrated Man.
I said, go ahead and read them. You should if you haven't already.
Yeah. They are definitive works in science fiction, and he was one of the major forces in developing science fiction as we know it today. He will be missed, and we just wanted to take a moment to talk about his effect. And that is our top story for this week, and I'm going to pass it over to you, Jason, for business.
Right, thanks, Eric. And I'd just like to say that, he's been a real inspiration to me as a writer, and I think that everyone can really say that. So, like I said, if you haven't read anything by Ray Bradbury, if you were not forced to read Fahrenheit 451 as a kid, man, you gotta go do that. All right, so now into business. We've got four stories this week, and we begin with Robot 6's report on 1 Million Moms Facebook fiasco. When they tried to begin a Facebook group to warn the public about the recent storylines from Marvel and DC that predominantly feature gay characters, the site was quickly taken down because it was inundated with so many positive reactions supporting Marvel and DC's decision. It's actually said that OMM's admin couldn't delete the comments fast enough. So, when asked why they took down the site, 1 Million Moms stated that they were, get this, going offline for the week because of Vacation Bible School. Which, you know, that's totally legit, you know. So Robot 6 actually goes even further to question how big OMM really is and if there are, in fact, any moms behind the group. Because this isn't the first campaign that's kind of going belly up. Almost the same thing happened when a Facebook group was started by them in reaction to JCPenney hiring Ellen DeGeneres as a spokeswoman. Taking this to account and the fact that 1 Million Moms is backed by an anti-gay group called the American Family Association, it's hard not to wonder how much of what they do is just simply AstroTurf. Our next story is about the recent layoffs at Diamond Digital, and it comes to us from Bleeding Cool, where they've informed us that Dave Bowen, who headed up Diamond's digital initiative and actually really started it, has left the company. Details are sparse at this point because Diamond hasn't responded to any media inquiries, but Michael Murphy of Iverse, Diamond's partner in this endeavor, made a statement to Bleeding Cool that everything is still on track for the digital initiative and that he wishes Bowen the best of luck in his future endeavors. So it's really just kind of keep calm and carry on. We'll be watching this to see if that, you know, really changes anything. Next up, from ICV2, we're told that there's a little rumor going about that Amazon is taking a step into the realm of content production by hiring Mr. Clive Barker to write and direct for Amazon Studios a little ditty called Zombies vs. Gladiators. Now, you might remember Barker. His claim to fame comes from works like the Hellraiser and Candyman series, which were really popular in the late 90s. But if you don't remember him, don't feel so bad. What we really want to know is if mashups like this are really going to make any money for them, but the best of luck to them. But we just really have to wonder if it's going to be successful, because I don't really think that Barker's name is going to carry the film. All right, and our final story. comes from Ruben Bolling, the author of Tom the Dancing Bug via Go Comics, and it's about the success of the first month of his experiment called The Inner Hive. What it is a subscription service where Bolling offers members special access to Tom the Dancing Bug comic with a private email of the weekly comic a day before it goes public, and they also get access to contests and giveaways and the occasional bonus content like sketches and unused drafts of the comic. The subscription is $9.99 for a six-month period, and it's really, at this point, it's become the comic's largest source of income. Now, this is definitely a case of your mileage may vary. Bolling states that the intention was to make this a supplementary way to keep the comic viable. And you also have to keep in mind that he's been around for a while and he's generated a large following, not to mention that his work is featured by Boy Boing and other large sites. But it's a good argument for a subscription service that can be successful when it offers something of additional value that doesn't hamstring the audience. So that's it for business. I'm going to turn it over to Marie with legal.
All righty then. So we've got a couple of stories in legal. We got three, actually, in total. The first one is coming to us from Robot6 again, and also on Google, about the Archie lawsuit. Apparently, this particular lawsuit is a little bit bizarre. It's more internal than it is anything else. Apparently, there's been a year-long legal feud for control of Archie Comics between co-CEO Nancy Silricket. Should I say that right? Terrible with names. and John L. Goldwater, that both are essentially fighting for control of the company. There's been a lot of mudslinging back and forth, claiming that Nancy was bullying and sexually harassing employees and sued her. And then she turned around and countersued him for $100 million in damages and defamation. And this has been going on. It seems that they finally worked things out after I think it was a Supreme Justice. I'm looking through the article going, which one was it? But they were basically, legally they've been adjudicated their sort of respective positions. The settlement allows basically her, who controls 50% of the stake at Archie, to go back to her office and start overseeing their Scholastic and live theater endeavors, and Goldwater, who owns 25% of the shares, basically gets everything else. So they can go to their respective corners and resume running the company now, and that seems to be all settled and squared off. And of course, if you want to read more about it, you can check out the link. Our second article is about finding the right business partner, and it comes to us from GigaOhm.com. And basically, it is basically an article on business relationships and the tribulations and tips of one person, Lisa Stone, who is the co-founder and CEO of Blogger, talking about her sort of life lessons and what tips she has if you are in the market for trying to find somebody to found a company with. Things about trust, passion for your project, not making business personal, and things to unite and bring you together, and talks about some more advanced stuff like stock and whatnot. So if you are looking at starting a business and you need some tips, it would be a good article to check out. Our last article is about Barnes & Noble's protest over the regulation of ebooks, and it's come to us from paidcontent.org, but there's a lot of other articles off of the main one. Basically, there is a kind of feud going on around the pricing of ebooks, and the Department of Justice is seeing Barnes & Noble's complaint that there's a proposed settlement with HarperCollins, Hatchett, and Simon and Schuster for basically, they're allegedly concluding to fix ebook prices. They claim it is to, quote, represents an unprecedented effort to become a regulator of a nascent technology that it little understands. And, quote, the national economy and our nation's culture and the future of copyrighted expression are at stake, unquote. So basically, they're arguing that everything, ebook and hardcover prices have fallen under agency pricing, and they're all really butthurt about it. So if you, it's pretty long, and it's quite, there's quite a bit of like legalese under it, and a bunch of points that the punishment doesn't fit the crime, of the national economy, and, you know, expression is at stake, and that they're losing money, and that it's just a mess. So if you want to find out more about this ebook debacle, go check out the link. And that is the last of the business news. So over to education. Alex?
This week in education, we have quite a few items. First up, over on remindblog.com, Jason Brubaker has put together a list of artist illustration and comic forums. There's quite a number here, many of which I'd never even heard of. I've heard of things like, you know, conceptart.org and CG Society, but there's also, like, the webcomic list makes it onto the list, and comicbookresources.com, and all sorts of things that range from, you know, which ones are cartoonist friendly, which ones are more for illustration, painting, and 3D, and all that kind of stuff, so that's pretty cool. It also tells you how many members are in each forum, so you can kind of get a quick idea of what forums you might be interested in joining. So you can go over to remindblog.com and check that out. And the next up is on makingcomics.com, a very quick and easy tutorial on text effects in Photoshop for sound effects and whatnot. And then over on pennyartk.com, the Extra Credits web series has a new episode about discussing the trend of, specifically game franchises, and the trend that everything is more hard-boiled and darker and edgier and grittier, partially thanks to, the Call of Duty franchise, going that route in the last couple of years. It's got a great discussion about, you know, nihilism does not equal maturity, and how to use sort of darker elements to actually make a game mature rather than sort of parading it around and having your main character say, I just hate everything and everything sucks. Ugh. And sort of tying into that over on Too Busy Thinking About comics.blogspot.co.uk via Robot 6, this is Colin Smith has a very, very long blog entry sort of decrying the fact that Amazing Spider-Man number 685 is basically just a long, long, long bit of torture porn of Spider-Man and this other chick torturing Sandman. Sort of taking issue with the fact that this is Spider-Man and this seems really, really out of character, and why are comics doing this? What happened? Why can't we have nice things anymore? Moving on from that, over on the NewYorker.com, which came to us via Comics Reporter, the New Yorker cartoonists can apparently make comics in their sleep. And there's an article discussing cartoons based on dreams and the relationship between dreams and cartoons, and how lots of the the single panel New Yorker cartoons get their ideas from dreams. And also has sort of a rundown of one creator that actually places the cartoon to be captioned by their bed and looks at it, you know, until they fall asleep, and so hopefully when they wake up they come up with a funny caption for it. Yep.
Yep.
And then finally, in education this week, over on...
if they don't have it, they don't get paid.
Anyways, over on Comic Book Resources, they shared a digital comics tutorial from Thrillbent of their Cthulhu Calls story. They have storyboards, the original script, and sort of annotations with the storyboards to sort of get an idea of their workflow for their awesome digital comics. And that's it for education this week.
Okay, thanks, Alex. That's a lot of education. I hope that you're a lot smarter. I know I am. at this point.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break to pay the bills, and so hold on, and we'll be right back.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Welcome back. This is your buddy Jason. We're going to go right into tech with our friend Eric. Eric?
All right. In this week's tech, our first story coming up is the Honesty Bot, books brought to us from Comic Book Resources and posted on morerepin.com. Look at the show notes.
It's a portmanteau.
Yeah. And this is a tool that these comic book creators have come up to try to reduce the amount of theft of comic books, specifically torrent downloads. They have put a number of keywords into their website that will catch torrent searches. And instead of simply when they catch the torrent, the text that is sent to the search engine talks about how hard they have worked on it, and asks the people to buy the item legitimately. So it is not a hard and fast DRM requirement, simply a appeal to people who are downloading torrents to please stop. The effectiveness of that is questionable, but it is the way they have chosen to go about that problem. Next story is coming to us from Kickstarter itself. This was found by Warren Ellis, and this is a pen for the iPad. Now, there are a number of pens on the market, but this pen comes with a number of collaboration and cloud software that allows you to work with other people at the same time on a similar drawing. The pen has a nice carrying case and hooks into the machine. At this time, the Kickstarter has completed, and it has reached its goal, so this pen will be produced, and this will be something that you can purchase for your iPad if you wish to draw on your iPad. It is unfortunately not pressure sensitive. That gold standard has still not been produced on any tablet to this date. Our last story in tech is getting to know the Android OS. This comes from Smash Magazine. This is a very lengthy article for developers, showing how the Android OS works and how to develop for the Android OS. If you are planning on making anything for Android, this is a good starting point to see how to develop for that platform. It's not for the common novice, but if you are into the technical side of things, it will be something very useful. Those are our tech news, and I'll hand it off to Jason for our people section.
Thanks, Eric. Okay, starting out, we have a story from Newsarama. It's really a plea for artist Oliver Gnome, who is suffering from a brain tumor. If you go to the article, it says he's done work with Aspen and DC and Wildstorm. And, you know, being an artist, it's really not that great to have a life-threatening illness when there's problems with trying to afford insurance. So please take a look at this. We encourage you to see if you can help support and help out. There's always going to be, you know, every dollar makes a difference. And then our next story, coming to us from Comics Alliance, we have, it's really a video, go check it out, Harvey Pekar's final interview. I'm sorry, it's not a video, I correct that, it's an audio interview. Really, you just have to go listen to it, and that will probably be the best way to do it, unless we could put it in the news story, which I don't think we will. All right, that is it for people. I'm going to hand it over to Alex for tidbits.
Yay, tidbits. First up, we have a webcomic that is also an RPG. This comes from Robot Six. And it is all about Sidekick Quest, a webcomic by James Stowe, which launched in March. And apparently, the creator is also selling PDFs outlining how to play a Sidekick Quest RPG and offers to do commissions of fans for their player characters. So that's pretty cool. Next up, Laura Hudson is leaving Comic Alliance as its editor-in-chief over on comicsalliance.com. Laura Hudson has written a big goodbye. It was a hard decision, as these things usually are, but she decided that, you know, she has been doing so much editing and running of the website and stuff like that, that it has really hampered her writing and that she wasn't doing either job justice. So she is stepping down and leaving the site in the hands of her very, very worthy, what are they called?
Replacement?
People. Yeah.
Sorry.
So we wish Laura luck in her future endeavors and hope to see her writing somewhere on the internet very, very soon. Next up, a copyright infringer is claiming reporting her is illegal. This comes to us from Slashdot and PetaPixel.com. A photographer named Jaylee snapped this lovely photo of downtown Houston. And on a lark, he was searching for it on the internet to see, just to make sure it wasn't being used in any sort of, you know, illegal ways. And apparently, among the many sites that had been using his photograph without credit or compensation, one of them belonged to a woman named Candace Schwager, who had 14 of her sites temporarily taken offline as a result of the takedown request. Her host is GoDaddy, and apparently when they get a DMCA request, they will just sort of temporarily disable a user's entire account until it gets resolved. One of those websites was apparently services and support for disabled children, as well as a campaigning website for some other local politician, and Ms. Schwager proceeded to sort of go ballistic on this guy, saying that he was killing the children, and not wanting to engage in a legal battle, Lee quickly took down his blog post detailing her shenanigans, but not before the story went viral with the help of Slashdot. What began as an attempt to protect his own copyright quickly turned into a very messy and public battle and a very strange infringement case. Next up from Robot Six, once again, there's a new Star Trek The Next Generation and Doctor Who crossover comic that is going to be released digital first. It has been released digital first. According to the director of e-publishing at IDW, it looks like it'll be pretty awesome. It's also available for Barnes & Noble's Nook. And finally, from GigaOhm, coming soon to an airport near you, free iPads. Three North American airports are going to be experimenting with iPad terminals, free for anyone or available for anyone's use to help sort of calm the airport blues when waiting for layovers and stuff like that. They will be at LaGuardia, Minneapolis St. Paul International, and Toronto Pearson International. The group behind it is called OTG Management, who is also known for running airport food services. And that is it for Tidbits this week.
Okay, and next we have Marie with oddities.
All right, we have three very odd oddities this week. The first one isn't that odd, but it is the coming to us from Slashdot. There is a neurological link apparently between genius and insanity, and if you go to Slashdot, it'll take you through to a story on MedicalDaily.com, which basically discusses the truth of the mad scientist myth that there is a genius or a link between genius and insanity, and it's a pretty thin line. It actually goes into detail talking about how those with mental illnesses like schizophrenia and bipolar disease are often found to be highly creative and intelligent people. And it is being investigated by a group of scientists who have all suffered from some kind of mental disorder. So take it as you will. But it basically looks at how the brain is functioning in these individuals and sort of the idea of the tortured genius or mad scientist, that creativity can be linked significantly to mood disorders, and especially bipolar disorder, And depending on the time cycle of the bipolarism, they can have extreme creativity and extreme ways of thinking originally, despite the fact that they're suffering from these mental illnesses. It also looks at schizophrenia, that people who are incredibly intelligent at about age 16 when they get older can develop schizophrenia. And it's kind of like a precursor to it. So, But if you want to read more about it, it is, you can go to the Slashdot link and check it out. It is actually a really interesting article, kind of looking at that. And it actually kind of makes me think about my dad. Anyway, the next one, if you haven't seen it floating around the internet, is about a flying cat. This one is coming to us from co-ironwill.blogspot.com. Is talking about a fellow who has turned his stuffed pet cat, yes, that's right, it was his pet cat that he had stuffed, into a remote-controlled flying helicopter thing. Really, there's not much more to say. He was run over by a car, and he had them stuffed, and then he put helicopter propellers on his cat. This is the most creepy thing I have ever seen. There are videos of it flying around.
Wait, Marie, have you looked at the next story?
Okay, I'm sorry. This actually
isn't the next story. Why isn't the next story under things that make us cry?
Yeah, that's true. Why is that? Okay, we'll go to the next story. Because, okay, the cat girl was creepy, but this is even creepier. Okay, people, this is very not safe for work, and is, like, really, yes. So, apparently, Japan, as we know, is pretty screwed up, but it has gone to a whole new level of weird and gross. Apparently, a Japanese illustrator has decided to sell his sexual organs, yes, that's right, his twig and bits, as a gourmet meal. This is coming to us from graphicpolicy.com. Now, graphic policy isn't too bad if you go and actually read the article. It's just kind of telling you the facts. Basically, Japanese illustrator Mao Sugiyama offered his man bits up for up for a gourmet meal, and five people actually paid about the equivalent of $250 to partake in his meal that he had made, like by chef.
In his meat.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm 12 years old, apparently.
I'm trying to be good here. okay, this guy's 22-year-old dude considers himself asexual, so he apparently didn't need his stuff anymore. And he had a licensed chef prepare his man bits for a meal with Italian parsley and garnished with mushrooms. Apparently, this is not illegal in Japan, but health officials are concerned if any food hygiene laws were violated in the making of said meal. And wow, especially with all of the, like, zombie and cannibalism stuff that has been in the news lately, like the face eater down in Florida and all that sort of thing, it's just kind of like, what the heck? Now, if you are a really, really sick puppy or just incredibly morbidly curious, there is a link of Graphic Policy to where you can actually see pictures of said meal.
And can get reviews from the people who partook of the meal saying...
Yes. And even chefs criticizing how it was prepared. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah... Yeah.
And with that.
With that, we're going to go over to the things that make us cry.
Which, yes, that would be me. And yes, it does pale in comparison this week.
Things that make us cry.
This is more our outrage at the comic industry than things that make us weep for humanity. We've got two stories this week. First one is a scene from DC's Behind the Watchmen campaign, which comes across like your grandfather telling you how to program your VCR. They explain to us how this web thing works and how one makes a motion comic. So for any of you who were wondering how you make a god-awful piece of artwork that everyone reviles, DC now can tell you how it's done in graphic detail, because they are the experts in making things that people hate on the web.
Oh.
This is all counterpointed with the whole Beyond Watchmen campaign, and the whole story is that they are just sort of cheating Alan Moore out of his properties, and this is why they're doing it. So it's hard to feel anything good about their story. Going to and our next story goes further into large comic book companies making utter fools of themselves on the web, where Marvel execs offer Lucas $1,732.27 to release Howard the Duck on Blu-ray. It is Howard the Duck's 25th anniversary, and strangely enough, Lucas wants nothing to do with Howard the Duck movie and would like everyone to forget it exists. Marvel decided that they really should, you know, now that everyone loves Marvel for the Avengers movie, everyone should remember the horrible, horrible, horrible movies they've made in the past. Because why leave a good taste in everyone's mouth? And they trying to do something that's clear it's trying to be a viral campaign, but yet again, it just comes off as sort of sad of people not understanding what viral really is. They obviously offered this very strange sum so that it was supposed to be weird and campy, but you can't get beyond the fact that this is a major publishing company trying to push their major Hollywood movie with this silliness, and it just doesn't work. So both of these are kind of stupid. Now, I guess we misnamed it Things That Make Us Cry to Things That Make Us Angry, and Marie definitely had tears in my eyes with her story, but that's our...
Then be like, what? You've all been terribly did what?
That's our Things That Make Us Cry for this week, and back to you, Jason.
Oh my god. Okay. Thank you, Eric. Alright, so we're going to go on to our discussion portion right after this break. Stay tuned.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcast Beacon Newscast. Once again, I'm your host, Jason Strasberg, with Marie Terry, Alex Hebeling, and Eric Kimball. We also have some special guests today for our discussion portion. We have Eric and Britt, the author and artist for SnowByNight.com. Okay, guys, we want to get into this discussion because we know that we're all chomping at the bit here. So I think Eric and Britt, you said you had some interesting stuff to say about the nihilism does not equal mature video from the extra credits, which, you know, I just want to say right now, if you consider yourself in any way a writer, if you consider yourself in any way a storyteller, watch this freaking video. Jeez, man.
They really nailed it on the head as far as that whole genre and kind of what's going on, especially in the video game industry with that.
Yeah, the idea that maturity can come from making your character, that the fact that you can make your story seem in any way on an adult level by the amount of gore or by the amount that your main character hates themselves, no, that's not what being an adult is. An adult is dealing with real problems, solving a real problem and changing and growing. If your character doesn't do that, then there's no point to reading it. You're going to bore the hell out of me.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things we're seeing in video games, and I'm seeing it everywhere. I'm not just seeing it in video games. It is the stories that we used to write when we were 13 years old and we thought we were so mature is now becoming mainstream, and it's kind of pathetic. You know, this is what a young teen thinks mature is. I hate everything, and my mother died, and my girlfriend died, and I drink a lot, and I'll kill anyone who gets in my way, and I never smile and never laugh because only babies laugh.
You forgot In the Rain.
In the rain. The world is composed completely out of gray building material.
Sound violent music.
Yeah, no one has invented internal lighting or paint. people from Stalinist Russia look at it and say, "Wow, that's a little dark, don't you think?"
They did a really neat comparison using what was it, Max Payne, the first and second one that were really, really good games. And they were showing just that character dynamic that the main character had, and then suddenly in the third one, it's just he has no inspiration. Like, he's just this, like you said, you know, his dog died, and it's in the rain, and it's terrible. There's no, like, he's fighting for this, so there's no reason for his actions. So it was an interesting comparison that they did.
Yeah. And those don't make good stories. I mean, I guess they make passable video games in that, well, you're going around killing things, so the joy that you get out of the video games is your own input. Even if the main character is horrible, you can do funny things in the video game because you can sort of circumvent the plot there. But it's creeping into stories and comics. A lot of the recent webcomics I've seen follow this pattern, you know, and it's just awful. It's just not fun.
It's a popular trend, and so there's been several titles that have done it very successfully. The Diablo series, Dragon Age, was considered a, quote, dark fantasy. I, for one, turned the gore setting off of Dragon Age because I found it was just a little mask that they put on top of all your characters to splatter them with blood, which kind of, I thought, was a great testament for exactly what it was. It was a veneer of gore put on top of a story that I could turn off, and this had no effect on the story whatsoever.
Yeah.
And you can get away with this if you have a good story underneath the gore, or the nihilism. Neil Gaiman's Sandman series has a strong element of it, but he is such a good writer, he can pull it off. If you're going to rely on it as just a... just rely upon the gore to tell your story, it would become a crutch.
Yeah.
And it would actually get in the way.
And even Sandman has humor in it. You know, there's always humor somewhere in it. And it may just be situational humor. You know, obviously Sandman doesn't crack a smile ever in the stories, but
there's a balance to it. Like, they use the Team Fortress is great because it's not super realistic. It's kind of cartoony, but you have violence, but there's a lot of humor to it. It's a balance.
Yeah. Now, bouncing off of this, we also had the Spider-Man story with Spider-Man torturing people, Sandman, which... I find that is sort of the outgrowth of this. If nothing matters to your character, then all of a sudden, why not torture people? You know, why not do these horrible things? And
it's Spider-Man for goodness sake. I mean, this is the character that every kid that I knew grew up with and says, you know, he's identifiable. He's also intelligent on a level with a lot of people in the Marvel Universe who has like huge brains. I mean, but this is Spider-Man you're making do this. It just makes me kind of sad.
Yeah.
It's so far removed from what the character was, and I think really should still be, is that with great power comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be completely removed from this, that suddenly, you know, melting off a guy's face is completely justifiable. And the means justify the ends. It's like, that's kind of a red flag in my book. It's like, that's more of a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Who are they writing to at this point? I mean,
yeah, that's another thing.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Actually, I'm wondering if this is could be considered a reflection of our current times, because we do have a conversation that's going through the news about whether or not it's torture or enhanced interrogation techniques, and how far would we go? And oftentimes, writers are using their stories to grapple with time is big sub-moral issues of their time. For example, C.S. Lewis's book, Out of the Silent Planet,
mm-hmm.
is a discussion of, can you be a Christian and fight a war?
Yeah.
And this was C.S. Lewis trying to deal with World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lewis was a very devout Christian, and he was concerned, can he send people off to kill other people and not be breaking one of the Ten Commandments? And he wrote an entire book about it. And it's a very fascinating read, and I'm wondering if the torture elements that are showing up in so many stories is a lot of people trying to come to grips with that moral conundrum of what it means to be an American and how far can we go to defend our rights while still maintaining our
identity. Except that's not used like that.
It's
the veneer of gore putting over the story.
It's a hot button issue too. It's something shocking. It's like going back to the video games. If it's shocking, it's going to sell because it's, oh my God, you know, people are going to react to it. It's to get that reaction.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I feel is that it's just a shock. It's like this kind of almost cheap, easy shock factor.
Yeah.
This will sell books kind of thing where they're just kind of pulling out these, oh, people will buy it. You know, it's like when in the news world, if it bleeds, it leads. So, you know.
No, I'm serious. Yeah.
I'm serious. This is what news people tell. I work in a marketing department. I worked with journalists. This is what they say. If it bleeds, it leads. Because if it's violent and bloody, people want to know about it. It'll sell newspapers. It'll sell ad revenue. You know, it's all about money. It boils down to what's the quickest way to make a buck.
When we slow down, we pass car accidents.
Yeah. A good story takes time. It has to build. There has to be the right momentum. You have to hit the peaks. You have to build things up. There has to be a reason for the torture, and there has to be a consequence of the torture. It wouldn't be a big deal if there was actually a reason and a consequence. If it is leading to greater character growth, torturing a character is kind of something you have to do in a story a little bit. You know, if it actually becomes a moral dilemma for them, because then everybody can deal with this. It's like, okay, this has happened. You've had this horrible thing. It's like the Spider-Man with the whole Venom thing. He, you know, even in the third movie, which wasn't that great, he was still acting like a douche. And he eventually had to deal with the fact that he was acting like a douche. So, you know, like, at least if there's a consequence, it's like just kind of bringing it out there, throwing it out there, and just being like, oh, he's doing this horrible stuff, and there's no buildup, there's no consequence, there's no, you know, it's just not going to, it just, essentially for me, it's just like, it's that cheap veneer of gore. It's not even using gore to its true effect. It is not horrifying. It is not actually, it's just like throwing it out there without understanding the mechanics of how it's actually supposed to work.
Do you think the current trend might possibly lead to a backlash, such as that which led to the comic code?
It might, eventually, if people push it too far.
I don't think it's going to be that severe as the comic code was. I mean, we're not going to have, you know, things in front of the, you know, Supreme Justice, but...
And the comic code was a response to being wholesome. I don't think that's something that families are really looking... I mean, Yeah, the 1 Million Moms story kind of.
Yeah, if I could bring this in, this is what drives me nuts about 1 Million Moms. They are up in arms about gay characters, except when Spider-Man tortures people, when women get chopped up and shoved into refrigerators, when Spider-Man makes a deal with the freaking devil not a peep from these people. That's all morally okay, but gay people getting married, then we have a problem.
You see, the women was chopped up. They weren't putting it like a gay refrigerator because that would be...
How do you know?
Exactly. I just don't cover that.
Yeah, no, there is no backlash.
You're like my favorite person right now.
I think it was the refrigerator they had at the fourth Indiana Jones.
It was a Rainbow Electric. Yeah, I have one of those.
Actually has an attack of opportunity. Okay, my geekish. Sorry.
Boy, did someone just make a game joke?
Yeah.
Sweet.
My fridge, seriously, it has stats on it.
That's awesome.
So essentially what you're saying is that it seems to be a lot of the same stuff that led to the Combat Code Authority. Lots of gore, no consequences to evil acts, but
it's not the
society has changed.
I don't know if...
I think society has actually changed at this point.
I don't think it'll be as severe. It may be that, you know, eventually, I mean, because it did kind of happen with video games and stuff where there's like ratings on things. Yeah. Where people have to say, okay, this is a mature comic. You know, I mean, they do have it for adult stuff, but they don't have it for like, you know, they're still, it feels to me like they're, like the Marvel and DC is not really pandering to children as much anymore, and they're looking more at their upper level markets.
Is that because their audiences are aging?
I think so. I think and also that, you know, the younger generation is not buying as many physical books anymore and stuff either, so...
And the generation that they are pandering to at this point didn't have as many distractions as this generation does.
Yeah.
You could go to the drugstore. I mean, I still remember going to be able to buy comics and racks anywhere I went, but it's not as easy to find now. And when you're up against playing video games or watching television, you know, they just don't have as much market value.
Yeah, and I mean,
there's such a saturation from third parties as well, including the Japanese market. But the younger generation is, you know, they're really kind of going for, I would say, almost like college, like older high school college kids.
Yeah.
I think they're going for more like the like 18 to 35 market-ish in there somewhere. Yeah. They're not really marketing it at children anymore. It's not really, I think it's maturing and it's not a child's medium anymore. Quite like, you know, the Comic Code had it and where it was like, you know, it was like kids medium. But it's also interesting. I mean, this is just speaking from experience is that, you know, I was at a convention recently and people aren't buying issues of comic books anymore. They only buy graphic novels. Like they really only want to buy the graphic novels. So, you know, you're looking at a complete change of, sort of buyer mentality and everything else in there. So, I mean, if you're buying a graphic novel, you are getting a complete story. You can go through and do the proper story development that, you know, something like that would be held in context with.
Unless you're Naruto and it takes you like 20 volumes to move a character like Dragon
Ball
Z. That's
only because the guy was heavily influenced by Dragon Ball Z.
Well, yeah, okay, there's a direct cause and effect there, so my bad.
Exactly.
Take 5 episodes before you actually know exactly what's going to happen because the announcer keeps telling you, but you're not going to see it.
Yeah.
Until episode 135.
Detect a bit of bitterness.
Slightly.
I just skipped episodes.
I would too.
Just like, add to the next 4 episodes. Okay, we'll go skip to the next, you know, 4 episodes down the line, and then I'll watch it.
You haven't missed anything.
Exactly. Just more speed lines.
Comment about novels brings up an interesting idea, thought in my mind, which was, do you think a digital distribution model would bring back more people interested in smaller issues rather than graphic novels, because that way they wouldn't have to collect individual issues, have them laying all over the house, and having to store all of them.
If they were priced correctly, one of the biggest problems, and this is the thing that drives me, yet again, relating to a story, the honesty box. The thing that drove me nuts about that is, you know, we are going to appeal that they pay $3.50 for, you know, $3.99 for our hard-earned 20 pages, you know, and it's like, you're never going to get someone pirating a site to listen to your appeal when you're gouging them on prices like that. There is no way in hell 20 pages of comics is worth $3. It's $4. It just doesn't work. And if they would lower the price, you know, if it was a buck for 40 pages, I'd say, yeah, sure, I'll get that. Why the heck not?
That's is that maybe, for hard copy or for electronic copy?
For electronic. For electronic copy that I can't own, that, you know, that goes through the stupid Comixology app where I don't own it and they can make it disappear at any moment. For 40 pages for a buck, I would do that. And I would be buying comics left and right.
Well, iTunes got that system down really well, I would say. You know, it's 99 cents. People are more willing to pay 99 cents for, like, a couple songs. It just it works a little better because it's digital. You don't have, you know, the CD, any of the physical cases or stuff like that. People, it's all digital. And,
but every single comic book on sale on the apps are $3 to $4. That's the price they insist on charging.
Yeah, for a digital copy, that's
just too much for a digital copy. Yeah. It's like the same price you pay pretty much for a hard copy.
It's exactly it is the same price. And that's because anytime they try to lower the prices, the comic book shops
freak out.
Yeah. You know, and they say, well, we can't lose our only distribution, and they've left the supermarket, so their only distribution method is the comic book shops. So they're beholden to them. And, you know, it's a crappy situation, but they're not going to get people to stop downloading torrents until they lower the price, you know, to a reasonable amount.
I wonder if, like, there could be some kind of a subscription model where it's like, you know, say that you subscribe to Superman or you subscribe to Spider-Man and you just get them. They just come when they're available. Like, you pay a larger amount of money, but it makes sense because now you're getting, like, 12 issues.
Well, no, subscription models, you should pay less.
Well, you should pay less,
like overall, like a discount. Yeah.
Well, but but if it was more than an individual... Like say you paid $5 for a subscription for like 6 months.
Yeah.
But would the comic book companies buck as much because it's more than the price of an individual issue but less than the price of buying them overall?
Well, they do have the advantage of now they have guaranteed sales. They know you're going to buy the book, as opposed to whenever they send comic books out to like supermarkets. One of the problems they had was that supermarkets could send them back and receive a full refund. And I think they were destroying, 80% of the comics they had printed?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it was an astronomical number. And with digital, you don't have that back end.
No printing, no distribution, no trucks, no gas.
And then you look at the number that they actually do in a comic book print. And then the you know, I think what some of the bigger ones are couple thousand or 15,000-16,000. I mean, the number is hugely small as compared to the amount of audience that you can have for digital distribution. And so why even bother with printing them at some point?
Because then why do you have all these people hired
they're going to have to ask that question at some point anyways.
Inertia.
Yeah. Again, I think people would buy the graphic novels. I just say I think they should really move away from the issue idea, like the smaller comic books, like the printing the little ones, and just worry about graphic novels, like collector's editions with additional material and stuff, and then maybe an extra story that isn't a part of the digital downloads, or some extra pages, or bonus artwork, or artist stuff, or whatever, like interview something in there that gives it some bonus material, and then just sell the graphic novels because it would be easier and probably better because most people these days are buying the graphic novels from, you know, the brick and mortar stores rather than the individual issues. Yes, it would kill the comic book, the comic book stores. But I don't know if a lot of these stores are actually doing most of their business in comics anymore. And they would still carry the graphic novels. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them do it in video games or tabletop gaming, card games, like collectibles, figurines. I mean, so there's a lot of them have their fingers in a lot of different pies, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they have to.
Yeah. They sell snacks.
Yeah, and just from the subscription model, we have had successes on the subscription model. The subscription model works in webcomics. From this guy selling his political cartoons as a subscription model, that has worked for him. I mean, I know Brad Geiger sells his comic he sells advances of his comic, a whole month of his comic, for $3. And that's, you know, he makes a comic every day, so that's a fair amount of comics. But he gets mm-hmm. money off of selling advanced issues of his own comic. Yet again, subscription-based models. And this is, he's competing with himself, who is giving it away for free. And he still is able to sell it as a digital copy. Because selling it as a digital copy is more convenient than going to his website every day. And it works. And this is something that a lot of people have been doing, experimenting with, and it's gotten to be a success if you set the price correctly. If you set the price...
It's more to it than that, Eric.
Yeah.
Is the price, and also they have to know you.
Yes.
It's impossible for a startup webcomic like us to actually have a subscription model because people don't know who we are. I mean, we've been around for a year. We have over 100 pages. But if I put it behind a subscription wall, people wouldn't get to see the awesome art that Brittany is doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the subscription model has to go hand in hand with a free site. And this is the discovery. I mean, even when Akewood went to subscription model, where everyone knew Akewood and loved Akewood, when it went to a subscription model, it died because there was nothing free bringing people in. The subscription model has to go hand in hand with free comics, and this is the other part that that major publishers aren't getting. They have to give something away for free. They cannot just say you must pay for all content and all the time, because that is the path of slow death.
Unless you're
there's got to be some kind of hook.
And it has to be free, it has to be easy, and it has to be convenient.
Mm-hmm. You have to offer George Lucas a paltry sum of money.
Yeah. But, I mean, Eric,
like,
I mean,
pocket change for him. He cries into, like, his own dollar bill hankies, just like $100 bills below his nose, you know. That's pocket change he finds in the couch. That's, you know.
No, we love you, George. We really do. You crazy old man.
That man is a great visual storyteller. He can't write dialogue, but boy, can he do special effects and dogfights.
But that's true, very true. You know, he doesn't have Joseph Campbell anymore to help write his story.
Hey, if I'm going to choose a Ghost Rider, I want Joseph Campbell.
Oh, I would too.
Let's all have Joseph Campbell.
If only.
Yeah, let's get the cloning vats. Let's go.
Done and done, sir.
No, but I mean, I'm gonna say this to you, Eric. If you started collecting your comic up that you've put on the web for free, collecting it into large issues and selling it for a buck as a PDF download, I bet you'd get takers. Even though you have the comic up there for free, if you collected them into PDFs in a digital format that's more convenient that people can put on their iPads and iPhones and read at their leisure, I bet you'd get people taking it. I bet you would.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah, no, we actually looked into that as far as, like, when we get the store open, having it available.
Yeah. And that has been the second biggest seller for me. PDF downloads of the comic that is up for free. The biggest seller is the porn, but after the porn.
it sells.
We'll just be honest. It's okay.
Yeah.
But after that.
That's what I plan on doing for my new comic that I'm going to be starting up this summer. I'm going to have whole chapters available as a 99-cent PDF download.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought you meant you were going to start doing porn.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, if they don't want to wait for the webcomic, they can get it all at once for a buck.
Hey, as the old veteran here, don't go down the porn route. Just. It's like the dark side. It's faster, it's quicker, but once you step down that road, forever will it dominate your path. It's
sad, true. Words of advice from Eric. Oh, don't do the porn.
It is kind of interesting. People get more bent out over sex than the nihilism.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, like, do horrible things, you know, mutilate bodies and stuff, and people are like, meh. And, oh, no, it's, you know, side boob. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing that drives me nuts, is the outrage is completely misplaced. But I think they feel they've lost that battle. I think they look at video games, they look at all the things that have happened, and they just go, we can't fight this.
Well, I think it also opens doorways to questions that they don't really want to ask. I mean, it's easy to portray pornography and sex in a bad light, but when you start asking questions about slaughter, and you start asking questions about torture, then you start asking, well, why are we over in this country waging war with these people? And I think that no one really wants to open that door.
Yeah.
Probably that means it's even more important that we open that door and have that discussion.
Cool. Yeah, but who's going to be the first person to open that door?
Some poor fool.
Not it.
Have the NPC do it.
Another game reference. That's true. Now we just have to get a Monty Python reference and we're set.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't have any coconuts to clap together. So.
Yeah. There we are. No, but the rabbit would kick your ass and it would be a slaughter.
Yes.
With sharp, gnashing teeth.
I'll gnaw your knees off.
What else were we going to talk about here? We got about 10 minutes.
Dreaming.
Dreaming, yes.
We have a
dreaming.
All you have to do is dream. Well, take that away, Brett.
Yeah. I want to know, I mean, do you buy into the subconscious being this place in the back of your mind that you really have no control but projects ideas when you wake up?
Well, I think it's a lot of different things, because just kind of speaking from experience, I tend to draw very intuitively. So sometimes I will sit down and I'm not really sure what I'm doing until I'm done. And I think that really pulls also from your subconscious. And I actually have a hard time remembering dreams. I know some people who don't. They can have very, very vivid dreams and they remember everything. So a lot of that kind of inspiration for me kind of comes in that semi-asleep and wake state that you sometimes get, like, in the morning or before you go, like, before you actually fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have some, you know, ideas kind of pop into my head, or if I'm just drawing, it's almost like a meditative state where, you know, things will just pop in, and I'll keep, this, you know, a little sketchbook near me and doodle something or write something down just to try to grab a hold of it, because it's really like grasping at smoke sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you wake up in the morning and you see tomatoes written on a piece of paper, and that was the funniest joke you could think of that night.
Yeah, it was hilarious then, but then you're like, what?
I have had experiences where I've had very good stories come from dreams. Now they needed to be massaged a little bit, you know, and I have also had times where I wake up in the morning, I say, oh my God, this is the greatest idea ever. And I get to my notepad. I write down everything I can remember about it. And that does help me remember the dream later. But there have been times I've come back to that notepad and I've read what I wrote down and I say, this is the stupidest thing I have ever imagined. When you say you let your imagination just go, sometimes it's dumb, you know?
Well, true. That's why it's a sketchbook, and that's why, you know, it's a place to just dump those ideas. But then later on, sometimes, you know, if you're looking for something, I'll flip back, and there may be a really dumb idea, but there's like a little grain in there that I'm like, hey, I might be able to use that. And you can kind of take bits and pieces of it, so.
Yeah.
Does it get easier, do you feel? I mean, you've been doing the comics, what, about a year old? You said you were around over 100. I mean, do you think it gets easier as you try to make this meditative state happen?
Well, not so much for the comic, because we do a lot of our planning and thumbnails, because we have a group of people that work on it, so thumbnails are really the easiest way. So a lot of the brainstorming is very collective in that aspect. But sometimes when I'm either drawing for myself or I'm doing prints for the comic or commissions, that's kind of when that happens, where I just kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's more of an intuitive thing of like, oh, maybe I'm going to do this. And then I'll pull back and be like, and sometimes it's terrifying. Sometimes I'll draw something and be like, where did that come from? You're drawing people, you're drawing explosions or something like that, and suddenly, like, a cute baby dragon with big anime eyes pops out, and you're just like, why? Where did you come from? And I don't know.
Yeah.
Not that I speak from experience with that.
Yeah.
We have had four cute baby dragons from Starlight Night so far.
One of the things I find is I always have to have a notebook with me. Because it's not so much dreams, but it is when I shut my brain off. You know, when I'm taking walks. And I'll be taking walks and I'll be looking and saying, oh, a beautiful butterfly. And then just all of a sudden in my head will pop the solution to all the to a problem in our script I was having. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's it. And here's the thing. If I don't write it down in that moment, by the time I get back, you know, it's gone.
Yeah. And there's nothing.
It's absolutely gone from your brain. And
it's a horrible feeling.
You know, I don't know if it's really a dream state, but I think there is real advantage to just sort of shutting your brain off and saying, sure. I'm not going to think about it.
A lot of Snow by Night happens like that on walk or when I'm doing interstate driving.
Okay. Yeah, I get a lot of
God. It is on the highway.
Yeah, don't try to write when you're driving. That's dangerous.
I'm lucky I can hold it in my head, but I still have like these great scenes that play out like movies in my head when I'm thinking of particular scenes of my comic, and I'm thinking like, okay, how do I want to handle this? And it's like watching this like movie unfold in the back of my head, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to grab this frame and this frame and this frame and this frame, and I'm all excited by the time I get home and I can write it down.
Yeah.
Well, it's the best feeling in the world, isn't it?
Oh, it's awesome. And it looks so cool. I'm like, if only I could extract this as an AVI and a movie on the web with some music, I would be set.
Like from Harry Potter, you just put the wand to your forehead and just pull it out.
Yeah, just, there you go. Just put it on the internet, it's viral. Yeah,
you know, shove your face in the... No, but you don't want to shove your face into YouTube. That'd be dangerous.
Yeah. Here's the thing I found.
I'd probably break people, though.
But, I mean, I found that one of the important things on those long drives, turn off the radio. Because if I have the radio on, I don't come up with anything. I'm just
listening to this podcast.
Unless you're listening to this podcast, then of course you'll bounds of creativity. Yes. But
does music play an influence? Like I sometimes, depending on what I'm doing, I'll listen to classical or instrumental. Something that's no lyrics, but it's just like maybe some vocals, but it's mostly just instrumental. And then you know, does music play a part in any of your creative processes?
For me, yes. It's like an essential part of, I need music. I require it. It's like life. I breathe it. I love it. It's like, if I'm needing like inspiration for a particular scene, like say I'm doing like a fight scene, I want to find all the hard techno and I want to find all these crazy, awesome music. You know, like I want to play it and it's in the background and my brain kind of eventually tunes it out. Like there's actually a thing when you draw, your brain actually will turn off and you can't hear anything anymore. But it's there. It's like watching a music video in my head or something. It's like okay, now I can kind of feel it. And some music actually really inspires my brain to go in particular directions. You know, like I have particular songs that if I listen to them, I can see something over and over and over again. So it almost helps me remember something I was thinking about. And like if I'm doing a love scene, I'll find love themed type music. I'll find soft, you know, music and I'll listen to that and I'll be like, okay, this is sort of how I feel like the music should go and help me. It almost helps me pace things in some ways, like just to kind of, you know, tickle my brain enough that it kind of like, you know, or if I'm having a particularly difficult time with a particular type or mood or whatever, it just kind of puts me there in that moment so I can really focus on it.
I'm the exact opposite. I cannot have music on in the background, and it's because the music starts defining the tone of scenes for me instead of having the tone naturally occur. So if I have hard techno, I eventually get everything gritty, you know, even when there are points where there should have been humor in here. The music actually dominates the creative process instead of guiding.
You're doing more writing, right? Doing more writing than drawing. Well, drawing is a totally different exercise. I can't actually write dialogue while I'm listening to music. I have to turn everything off and write when everything is singing. But drawing is a totally sort of different thing because it's more intuitive and emotional and it taps that same side of your brain. So it's almost like pumping it up a little bit. Like it can be a little bit, you know, it can, but I'm selecting music. I select music specifically to a particular thing I am drawing. So it kind of is a mood thing. And it is true that your brain, your right side of your brain, and your left side of your brain are processing different information. So it'll eventually literally turn off your hearing when you get into the zone of drawing. It's like literally it'll just stop. It's like you get there and it'll just stop. You don't hear anything.
I've had that before too.
Eric, do you use music when you write, or do you have to turn it? Oh, okay.
I actually have iTunes and I have I actually have different playlists for different moods. For example, if I want tension, I have a certain playlist. If I have description, I have another playlist. Enya, I found her voice is pretty much an instrument.
Yeah.
She just blends right into the background. If I get distracted by the music, then it comes off the playlist because it's got to be background.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, whenever I'm writing, I will actually go into that same kind of zone where I will start blotting out everything around me except for me, the music, and the words on the page. Yeah, it's just kind of like drifting through the story.
All right. Well, I'm going to hand this over to Jason. I think we're at wrap-up time.
Right. That was a very good point, Eric. Thanks.
Yeah.
We're going to change something. Yeah. I wanted to say, post if you've got, I'd be interested to see what kind of music you have set up. I mean, I'd like to see some artists post what they're listening to, what they're doing for stories, and it's always really interesting to me to see and incorporating it in my own writing. So, idea.
I want to warn people, depending on how your brain works, you may find that music doesn't work for you because I cannot. And nothing destroys a story more than having music on in the background because it starts to infect everything I write. And the characters can't be themselves.
It is a very individual process. And so, every single person has a different process, whether it's music or not music or a certain type of music. For me, it'll change frequently. And I'll actually end up tweeting something I'm listening to. I'll be like, hey, page 18 is brought to you by AC/DC. Just throwing it out there.
Her Twitter feed is her stream of consciousness. It's awesome.
It's terrifying at times.
So keep that for the subscription. That's the bonus material.
Oh, God, 3 a.m. What is she doing now?
Oh, God. Twitter, everything you need for your stalking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's it.
We're a stalking community, though.
Enabling stalkers since 2005.
Well, I think we should probably wrap it up. This is some very fantastic discussions, guys. I want to take a second to thank Eric and Brent of Snow by Night. That's snowbynight.com. And guys, is there anything else you want to plug going on right now?
We're going to Heroes Con, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that?
Is it June 10th? Sorry, sir, June 20th?
Something like past that.
Sorry, 22nd through the 24th.
Yes, that one of those days.
And actually, you guys are making a lot of gaming references. In addition to doing the webcomic, I freelance for Wizards of the Coast.
Ooh.
And I have it coming out in time for Gen Con. It's called Menzo Baranzon, City of Intrigue.
Ooh, awesome. So send us a link. We'll post it.
Owl fans. From the Drift series, we are taking a new look at the City of the Drow that features prominently in R.A. Salvatore's book.
Mm-hmm.
I am the author with Brian James, who's the primary author, who has forgotten Realms lore than I've ever known.
Wow. I knew that name sounded familiar.
That's coming out in August. I'm really looking forward to it. So if you want ready to play a game full of drow, we have rules in there on how to do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. And I also want to thank big thank you to my co-hosts, Marie Terry of EvilSpaceCat.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex Hedelink of AlexsGuide.net.
What?
And Mr. Eric Kimball of BladeBunny.com.
Thank you, Jason.
Oh, yeah. And that's it for me, Jason Strasberg, your host for this week. Thanks a lot for listening, and actually, we won't see you next week, but we will see you the following week. We are taking a week off, a much-deserved rest. So, thanks a lot, and I guess I'll see you later.